Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, as we've all been hearing, AI, artificial intelligence, is changing our lives in ways that we're probably not even aware of yet. And the pace of that change is so swift that it can be a little bit hard to keep up. So we wanted to take a moment to look at some of the practical ways that AI is impacting our lives right now and also how it will do so over the next few years. Dr. Andrew Hines is here, lecturer at the School of Computer Science in UCD, to help us with all of this. Andrew, good to see you again. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks, Claire.
Now, ChatGPT, DeepSeek, all of these large language models. I mean, they're what people, most people, I think, associate with artificial intelligence, but it's much more than that. Can you explain why it's much more than that?
Well, that's what we're hearing about most in the news, because I think the companies are trying to corner the market at the moment. In the same way as Google managed to corner the market in search, it's now a competition for who can control the AI market. But they're trying to sell something to investors, and so they're selling that story, and that's what we're hearing all about. But there's AI is in a lot more than just these kind of large language models or ChatGPT or things like that. They're positively influencing our lives across healthcare, education, entertainment and jobs.
Right. Okay. Well, let's talk about some of those ways that things are changing for us because of AI. You mentioned health there first, and there was an interesting report recently about keyhole surgery and how much of that in time will be done by AI powered robots.
And again, I think this is where we need to a little bit separate the hype from the reality that, yes, this will happen, but will it happen tomorrow? Not really. There's a fair way to go before we're going to entrust AI to be able to deal with making these real-time decisions on doing a surgery and what happens when it goes wrong. It's the same thing that we see with driverless cars, that the AI involved in the computer vision systems that allows a driverless car to work, it works okay in a kind of a city environment where you have very controlled spaces and things, but you put it on a dark road in Kerry on a rainy day, and you're going to have a different reaction in terms of the performance of the driverless car.
Okay, so it's the same with AI when it comes to surgery.
Absolutely.
But across healthcare, AI is having an impact already.
It is. And so, like, in UCD, we've been doing some research recently on monitoring heart sounds for detecting murmurs and so on. And recently, as last year, Apple filed a patent for their AirPods, the earphones they have. And they've been looking at building upon the kind of research that we were doing on how do you use AI to classify from a heart sound whether there's a murmur or something there. They're looking at, well, how do we embed this in an everyday wearable consumer device? So they're looking at, can you, just by having the AirPod earphones in, can you use them to long-term monitor something and see if there's a health issue there? Mm-hmm. And so they've been doing this with a lot of wearables, and we're seeing it with the Apple Watches and with the Google ones, and this is happening all the time at the moment.
But then there's all sorts of complications around, where does that information go? Where is it stored? Who is it sold to?
Absolutely. There's a lot of concerns that we should have, and this is something that in UCD we recently announced a strategy to develop an AI institute. And the idea of that is to not just look at something from the perspective of industry or from the perspective of commercialization, or even from my own personal interest in terms of the perspective of the AI technology experts, but also to look at it from the perspective of people in arts, in culture, in social science, looking at how do we actually bring all of the different perspectives in to protect against these things from a societal perspective.
Okay, so the next area we want to look at is education, and this is a big one for you, given your background, where you're coming from in UCD. Students at third level, are they using artificial intelligence in their work and in their study?
100%. These models are being used in third level, in second level, and this is
and
why,
in primary school, might and I in primary add, school, from personal
absolutely.
Experience.
Yeah. And the ASTI have raised concerns about this in terms of the how are we going to assess continual assessment where there's a risk of it being done by AI. And if we look to other countries like Estonia, have a very kind of digital first perspective on these things. They've been doing this for decades, where their genomics of the whole society is available in a big database. And so they've adopted a very strong kind of technology thing. And what they're looking at doing is getting licenses for all of the large language models for their teachers and for their students, and encouraging them to use them. And that may be good in terms of keeping them at the forefront of the kind of the cutting edge of technology. But we have to look at it and go, these companies are not profitable with doing this at the moment. Mm-hmm. And there will be a change where suddenly they start charging more for it. And what happens if we make it that we push all of our learning to be dependent on these? As well as that, there's the whole risk of rote learning disappearing as a thing that we're
just
doing.
Just on the continuous assessment, can you send somebody away to write an essay anymore?
You can, but you'll get an essay back that is
written by a machine.
Absolutely.
So do you then have to sit down and feed that back into a computer and ask if this is generated by AI?
Computers can't do that. And why can't they do that? Well, how did we create these models? We gave them every piece of literature and writing that's ever been written by mankind and personkind in the last few hundred years, and we said learn from these. And so it's basically predicting words in the same way as people write. So it's
impossible.
It's impossible to do.
So is that assignment then, go away and write an essay on X, is that gone? Because you can't rely on whether the
pretty
person...
much like I personally have taken those kind of assignments out of my modules that I teach, because I got fed up reading essays that were taking 2 minutes to write and taking me 15 minutes to read. And I was there going,
what's the point?
What's the point? And really, like, if you look at, there was a really interesting article published last week by a group of researchers from MIT who used EEGs to look at how people's brains were reacting when they were using a large language model to help them write an essay, or not to help them write an essay. So some who didn't have it, some who did, and then some who used it afterwards. And they found some really interesting things where they use this term cognitive debt, which is basically where they're saying that a reliance on external systems replaces the kind of the effort and cognitive processes required for independent thinking. And what they saw was that people who were using these models, they could write a good essay, but if you ask them about what their essay was about the next week, they couldn't remember.
And that's a problem.
Absolutely. And then when you write the essay yourself, and then you use the model afterwards to reflect on it a week later, actually that can be reinforcing in terms of how you remember it. So it can be used for really good things in terms of education. Mm-hmm. But if we allow it to become a reliance, then we're causing issues in terms of our memory, that we're not actually remembering the things that we wanted to learn.
So
we're not building up the ideas and the critical thought. And education is about the journey, not the destination.
Yeah,
we're writing these essays to help learn, not to see a great essay.
Yeah, but education, it would seem, hasn't figured this out yet, have we? Because we have more continuous assessment at second level now than we had before. And that was a move that started before AI.
And that I think is the challenge, is that we started that move before AI when everyone started working from home during COVID. We moved all of our exams to be continual assessment in third level. And now we're looking and going, well, actually, do we need to move some of them back to not being that and to mix it to a blend of different assessment techniques?
More exams, hooray.
Well, but does it necessarily need to go back to the, well, it's a closed book exam in a big exam hall? Or do we need to actually start looking at novel ways of blending different kinds of assessment, whether it's oral, whether it's project work, whether it's getting people in an exam to talk about project work that they've done? And so that way, yes, if you can't remember it because the model did it for you, then you're going to find it hard to actually write about it. But if you did it, it should be a very easy question to answer. So there's different ways of doing it. And that's what we're looking at right now.
Yeah, finding a way
how do we find these ways of doing it.
Now, you mentioned entertainment as well, Andrew, and how AI is impacting on that. So what's happening there?
So in terms of entertainment, there's a lot of really good things that are happening in terms of entertainment and making things more inclusive. So now we have real-time translation. We have automatic closed captioning. We have automatic sign language. These are things that make it easier for inclusion of minority groups in, if you don't speak the language, or non-native speakers, deaf or hard of hearing. We're doing work on 3D immersive audio. So looking at how do you teach computers to listen like a person does? So rather than just hearing the sounds, hearing where the sounds are coming from and getting it so that they can, the same way as we can, if we are in a room, we close our eyes and we hear a noise, we can go, well, yes, the fan is behind me, the person's over there. So teaching a computer to do things like that is going to be great from a robotics perspective, is useful for immersive kind of entertainment and so on. So there's lots of these kind of things. But there's also some funny things that are going on in terms of language, for example, that the public service guidelines recommend that or advise that AI for translation is an okay thing to use it for. But the LLMs, they're built and maintained by companies that are worldwide companies. They're pulling in data from everywhere and they're optimizing them by getting people to check the answers and to say, well, which one of these will be a better answer? And there's been some unforeseen consequences like this. And I don't know if you've noticed, but if you see stuff written by LLMs, you often see words like delve and crucial and unleash and foster and unlock. And some of these words were less common in Ireland or in a lot of English-speaking countries because they weren't used that often. But in Nigeria, where the people who were doing the kind of the checking on these models, delve was a really common word. And so what we're seeing now is that essays and reports and articles written and
instruction manuals
suddenly have these words in them that weren't there. So we're kind of losing things that were things that were identifying us as individuals and as communities because we're becoming more homogeneous in terms of how we're doing.
Of course, people in the arts are incredibly concerned about what might happen with AI. I was reading an interview with one of the actors from The White Lotus, hugely successful, saying that actors are absolutely terrified about what's coming down the tracks. Should they be?
Yes. I don't know whether you should be terrified. There was an Australian radio DJ called Thy, T-H-Y, which was a play on words for the AI. And what did they do? They got an employee who worked in the finance department. They then cloned that person's voice and they got a company to do the continuity voiceover between the music tracks for a 4-hour daily show for 6 months.
And it sounded great.
It sounded great. No one even noticed.
Yeah, I've listened to podcasts presented by AI, two presenters, one male, one female, where they're looking at a report that's just been published, a government report, and they presented a very entertaining, professional-sounding analysis of that report.
And this is where I think it can be a really useful thing for people, is that if you've got a big, long report to read and you want to get into it quickly, you can just upload the report to a thing like Notebook LM, and Notebook LM will create this podcast for you. You listen to it and you get a nice summary of what's going on. Now, there's limitations to it. It's the same two voices every time. And it's slightly formulaic in terms of the way it will look at things, but it allows you to engage in something and listen to something in a different way and is good. So these are things that are really there now.
And go for a walk while you're digesting it.
And you know, I've done it myself, where there's a paper I wanted to read and I created a podcast of it and listened to it while I was driving and then went back and read it afterwards. But listening to it, the funny thing about it was it actually brought in things that weren't in it. it had the, so what's the broader impact of this? And it had a few examples of things, and I went, yeah, the article didn't even talk about those.
I'll print out my CV and I'll give it to you, Andrew. You can take it back to UCD and ask if anyone's interested. Thank you so much for coming in. Dr. Andrew Hines there, lecturer at the School of Computer Science at UCD. Right, we're going to be crossing live to London, where NECAP have been giving a press conference following this morning's court hearing. But coming up next, could Nigel Farage beat the odds and become Prime Minister? We'll discuss that after this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.